Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop on this Food Friday, December 18th. I'm Ray Graff. Ready to talk holiday cooking and baking today is Jennifer Clare, culinary instructor and founder of Home Cooking New York. If you have a question about cooking or want to share a family recipe, give us a call, 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. You can email us, of course. The email address is voxpop@wamc.org. voxpop@wamc.org, but the number once again is 800-348-2551 if you desire a chance to talk to Jennifer Clare. Your cooking calls will be coming up right after the news. Hello once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. Today on this Food Friday, we offer some assistance to all of you cooking at home. Here with her tips and suggestions is Jennifer Clare. Jennifer is a culinary instructor and the founder of Home Cooking New York, a cooking school in New York City. In March, she moved her cooking school online while she and her instructors wait out the pandemic. She is the author of 6 Basic Cooking Techniques, Culinary Essentials for the Home Cook. Jennifer is a former food editor at Martha Stewart Living and the former recipe editor at the Wall Street Journal. Jennifer is also the host of the cooking podcast, Kitchen Radio. If you have a question, give us a shout, 800-348-2551, or if you want to share a recipe this holiday time, 800-348-2551. You can also email us at voxpop@wamc.org. But again, the number is 800-348-2551. Jennifer Clare, welcome back. How have you been?
Hello. So, I've been good.
So nice.
I haven't really moved.
Well,
I know.
You've been laying very low, but the school is going well, I assume, online, yeah?
It is. It's pretty amazing. I mean, I obviously for a month there, I was kind of panicked that my business was out of commission, but it turns out that a lot of people want to learn how to cook in their own home kitchens. Everyone's very used to sort of being online for pretty much everything. So the idea of, you know, having an instructor zooming into your kitchen and looking at your pots and pans and your choice of olive oil is not so bad. It's been pretty incredible to meet people. You know, I'm in New York City cooking school, but now I'm national, sometimes international, where I'm meeting people from all over the country. It definitely makes the world seem smaller.
Do you have to bring a translator in at times?
No. But we haven't gotten that far yet.
Okay.
Fun thing is that not only do we have people coming to take classes, you know, mostly people are taking classes from like Canada or, you know, England, more the English-speaking countries. But we've actually just started adding instructors from other countries. So it's, you know, my whole staff is in New York City region. But now we have an instructor who is in New Delhi and someone in Buenos Aires, because that is sort of the beautiful silver lining of this pandemic. You can sort of connect with anyone. We could have before, but we just didn't even think about it.
It's funny how it's changed the whole thing. And I wonder, has it changed the attitude of those who have taken your classes? In other words, if I went to one of your cooking classes, and God help you if I ever did, you know, I'd be well behaved if we were in person. But if I was in my own kitchen, I'd be in my shorts, I'd be swearing, and you know, the whole thing. Do you find that people have a different attitude when they're doing it at home?
No, I mean, you would think that you're going to be all, you know, blasé about it. But the fact that you're zooming in with perfect strangers, like there's lots of other people in the classes who are there and your teacher, people tend to be on their best behavior. I haven't had any kind of, you know, embarrassing moments where people are improperly dressed.
You know, people who people who don't have to drive home, they have the cocktail, they have the, right. I got to add some more sweet vermouth to this and, you know, chugging a little bit here and there. No.
One nice thing is like no big cleanup. Like at the end, I don't have to like clean up a huge kitchen. It's just my kitchen. So yeah, people do drink definitely, but they don't get too rowdy. But the funny things that happen, of course, are just things that happen in your house that you don't notice are happening because you're just used to those sounds. But like all of a sudden, all these perfect strangers are listening to your dog bark or your child yell at you. Or
well, anyone who's been in a Zoom conference knows exactly what you're talking about. Hey, how's the podcast Kitchen Radio doing?
It's You know what? I'm embarrassed to say it. I put out a new episode, but it's the first one I did since the pandemic. I did a Thanksgiving episode because I felt like that was a good way to come back. It was really hard to do. I mean, the premise of my podcast was going into other people's home kitchens and they teach me how to cook something, like home cooks or professional chefs alike.
Yeah.
And since I couldn't go into people's homes, you know, that kind of stymied that. And I couldn't really figure out how to reinvent that. And I guess I was a little depressed too. I didn't feel like keeping it up, but I did do a Thanksgiving episode. But I must say, I'm so busy that I kind of don't have time for this. I mean, I'm running a different kind of business, which I love. It's still a cooking school, but now, you know, I have 5 instructors who work with me at the school in the city. So now essentially we have 6 cooking schools running simultaneously because everybody's got a kitchen that they're in. Everyone's got their own little Zoom room. And so I'm sort of running 6 different cooking schools at a time because people can, you know, teachers can teach simultaneously, just different things. So it's kind of a different business model. And I'm embracing all the work, but it's sort of a different beast. So it's gone on hold.
Jennifer
for now.
Claire is our guest. It's so neat that, you know, many people and many of us, and it's tragic in many ways that there's not a lot to do, and yet you find yourself more busy than ever. So that's a blessing.
Yeah, it was dumb luck. I mean, I'm in an industry. If I owned a restaurant, I would be having a very different conversation with you. So I feel, you know, I just got lucky that the thing that I happened to do was something that you could put online and that people wanted to do online. And so I feel like I'm feeling delighted by the growth of business, but, you know, there's always a part of me that feels guilty because I'm in the food business, which is currently struggling so much, but I happen just to be in a sector of it that doesn't have that sort of crushing overhead. So,
do you think that when this all is over, you will go back to brick and mortar style, or has your paradigm now changed, as they say?
It will just expand. I will absolutely go back to the brick and mortar. I miss people. I miss cooking with people in a kitchen. I mean, really, it's been very, you know, difficult, but this has been so good. And, you know, so many people, A, don't live in New York City, but also it turns out that a lot of companies or, like, you know, families, people don't live near each other. So even though they always didn't live near each other, the idea that you would do like a virtual event really never dawned on anyone. The capability was there well before March, but it's a new industry. And I don't think it's going to go away because people still live far apart from one another. And many companies either did work remotely before the pandemic or will continue to because, you know, if you can cut out that rent, I think a lot of companies are going to go that way. So they're always going to need a way to, like, entertain clients or keep their employee morale up. So we do a lot of sort of classes at the end of the night for different companies where, like, you know, people who haven't seen each other, who used to work side by side in cubicles, are now all over. And so they get together and cook dinner at the end of the night. So it's been a nice way to connect. And I don't think that's going to change.
The number to call here, by the way, is 800-348-2551. Jennifer Claire is here. And before we get to the food and the cooking and the holidays and the yada, 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 how do people find out about Home Cooking New York?
Well, the best place is our website, homecookingny.com. You know, anything you could possibly do, our public classes, our private classes, our cookbook, all kinds of fun things to do online till we can get out of our own kitchens. I feel like my fear is, you know, I run a business called Home Cooking New York. I think that when, you know, the vaccine is to the point where people can throw off their masks and dance in the streets, I feel like no one's ever going to want to be home again. No one's ever going to again.
Yeah, that's a great point. All right, tell you what, before we find out what you have been brewing up this holiday season, here's one email that came in prior to the show, and this one's from Jennifer. I'll give you a tough one right off the shoot here.
Okay.
Jennifer writes, I want to follow a recipe for breaded chicken, but it suggests dipping the chicken in egg before breading. My son is allergic to eggs. What is a safe alternative? He's also allergic to milk.
Oh, because that was, well, my alternative was going to be cream or buttermilk.
Nope.
A dairy-free coating. I mean, you need something sort of that's thickened. I feel like there's so many dairy products out there, like the faux dairy products, like the oat milk. You know, they have like oat milk creamer. You can do something like that. It has to be an unsweetened thing. Otherwise, you have a kind of a sweet.
Yeah.
So the point of the egg, obviously, is to glue the breading onto the chicken. So if she can find some sort of dairy substitute, something that people put in coffee unsweetened, it can be, I think the thickest one out there, in my opinion, is the oat versions. You know, there's like soy milk,
yeah,
hemp milk, but the oat milk
I'm
has
sorry,
that kind of
what?
Nice.
There's hemp milk?
Oh, there is. Yes. Actually, it's pretty creamy. It's very creamy. There was a time when I was experimenting with sort of non-dairy substitutes. And really, I think to me, oat is the one that has the same viscosity as milk, that sort of creaminess thing. So I would definitely say trying one of those. You can try any of the non-dairy milks, but they're kind of thin.
Yeah.
So they make these creamers now that are designed to be put in your coffee. So trying the creamer version, that would be something that would glue it to it. You could also just get that sort of egg. There's egg replacer that has, it's usually made out of flaxseed, which has a gelatinous to it.
Yeah.
So you can sort of dip that in there. And as long as the breadcrumb glues, that's fine.
Jennifer Clare is our guest. I tell you what, we'll take a break here, and then we'll talk about all the things you have done for the holiday season and all the things you plan to do. Our number here is 800-348-2551. If you have a food question for Jennifer Clare, 800-348-2551. We'll be right back. Thank you for the lovely music. At 20 minutes after 2 o'clock here on Vox Pop, it's Food Friday. Always happy to have Jennifer Clare on the line with us to discuss things. And the number to call if you have a question is 800-348-2551. You can also email us at voxpop@wamc.org. And that's what our buddy Rick did. And you might know Rick. Rick Orlando is a blast from the past on this show. He was a great chef. He was on quite often. Haven't talked to him in quite some time. He wrote, just wanted to give you a little hint for an alternative to eggs for breading. I've made plenty of vegan food in my career. I found that if you soak flax seeds in warm water for a few hours, that liquid works as well as egg whites. So there you go.
And that's excellent. Yeah, flax is one of those good substitutes for eggs. So you must really be disappointed because I can't bring you all my little food treats before we meet. That you were accustomed to.
Yes, it is an appalling situation, and I only hope that by the next time you're on, it's all better.
I know, me too. So, I won't even come back until I can, and we can eat together.
You come back anytime you want, obviously. Now, what are you cooking up? Anything new this holiday season?
Well, I'm definitely, when it's the holidays, although I feel maybe I'm like this all the time, but I definitely like to go big when it comes to holiday cooking. Like just sort of, you know, long simmering, bold ingredients, sort of like much more labor intensive sort of cooking. So the things that I've been making that I have, obviously I have time for, and it's, you know, not going out very much. So doing things like tamales, I've really loved making these kinds of things that you feel like take all day. They don't really take all day, but there's lots of sort of individualized work. So like tamales, you have to make each individual one. You have to make the filling. You have to make the masa dough. You have to wrap them up in these corn husks. But they're so good. I've been doing a lot of gnocchi because of all the classes that we teach, I must say I'm making a lot of gnocchi. I love it, but I'm possibly a little bit sick of it right now because it is something that people have really loved to learn how to make because it's something you think that you can only get at a restaurant. You think it's really labor intensive. And honestly, if you buy gnocchi in the supermarket, it is just not anywhere near the quality that when you make it at home. Like there's certain things that you can buy pre-made that are, you know, they resemble them slightly, but gnocchi is always like a lead balloon if it comes out of the freezer case.
Oh, really? So they're not supposed to taste like lead balloons? I didn't know that.
No, they're not supposed to be leaden. So we do potato gnocchi and ricotta gnocchi. So we've been doing a lot of that. I've been doing a lot of that. And then like lasagnas. Lasagna is not something I used to cook all the time, but now sometimes, again, it's because it is more labor intensive. So I definitely have, as the holidays come up, I spend more time cooking a meal as opposed to like more quickly at the end of the night.
Now, you're not making your own pasta, though, for the lasagna, right?
I am not.
No.
I mean, you could, and it's not difficult, but no, I am not.
Well, if it's not difficult, why don't you do it?
Yeah. Right, because it's another 30 minutes.
So oh, it
I'm
takes that long. I see. Can we go back to the tamales for a minute, and then we'll get to the phone?
Sure.
800-348-2551 if you have a question or comment for Jennifer Claire on holiday cooking, etc. All right, let's go back to the tamales. I'm embarrassed to admit it, but I have never had a tamale. What the hell is a tamale?
Okay, so tamale is a Mexican dish, and it is made out of the same ingredients that they use to make corn tortillas. So corn tortillas are made out of something called masa, which is just cornmeal or corn that's treated with lime. It just sort of gives it a different tenderness and flavor. And so it's this sort of soft, yummy corn dough that you roll out and fry up to make a tortilla. Mm. Or you basically mix it with a ton of fat, usually lard, although I didn't do that. I usually do is butter. So you mix this dough with a lot of fat and a little bit of broth. And it just gets to be this beautiful sort of soft, supple dough. And you stick, so tamales are steamed, and they're steamed wrapped in corn husks. So if you go to, you probably have never seen them, but if you go to any, they call it the international aisle, but there's just a bag of dried corn husks in there. And that's what they do. You take this masa dough and you, you know, make a little patty out of it, and you wrap this corn husk that you've soaked in water around it. So you can put anything in the middle of it that you want. Like, so anything you put in a quesadilla or a taco is going to be in a tamale. So it's going to be like, you know, green chicken or mole chicken or some like roasted poblano peppers or black beans. So you stick that in the middle, put the dough around it, wrap it up in a corn husk, and then stick it in a steamer. It's like, it's so many steps, but the results are these sort of soft, pillowy corn buns, basically. They're really good. So anytime you go to a Mexican restaurant, do you go to Mexican restaurants much? Because if you do, they're always going to be on the menu.
Okay.
You maybe just have never tried it.
How many times can you slap me during a show? You said, I'm sure you've never been to the international aisle. Hey, I've seen Chef Boyardee, Jennifer Claire, right? I've been there.
That's in the international aisle, right?
Right.
So, the next time you go to your next Mexican restaurant, you'll find tamales. But okay. Not all of them always have it because they're labor intensive.
The number to call here is 800-348-2551. If you'd like to be verbally slapped down by Jennifer Claire, we'd be happy to take your call. Nicholas in Tilson. Nicholas, you're on.
Hi. And Jennifer, you're welcome to slap me too.
Oh.
But okay. I'm just calling because the email from earlier, I heard the man who suggested flaxseed, and the other thing is canned chickpeas. The juice from canned chickpeas. I use that all the time because my partner is vegan. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yes, it's called aquafaba, chickpea water.
Ah, there you go.
That is a good one. Yep. Yeah, so. I love that.
All right, Nicholas. Well, you did very well, and Jennifer is pleased, obviously, with your work.
Thumbs up.
We had an email here from Bennett, who also suggested aquafaba. And he also wanted to shout out to his favorite WAMC staffer, Zach the Beast Malloy. Are you a beast, Zach? Is that true? All right, I'm not going to say that on the radio. The number is 800-348-2551. Did you cook a turkey for Thanksgiving?
I'm embarrassed to say I cooked a turkey breast because there's only four of us for dinner. Yeah. Actually, there's five of us. I didn't want to roast an entire turkey and then have to deal with all of that turkey. So I roasted just the breast. It's on the bone with the skin, but it's like this, that double-lobed breast.
Yeah.
And I did a buttermilk brine. That's my favorite way to roast poultry. So I just submerged this in a quart of buttermilk with a ton of salt in it. So it was like a salty buttermilk, tangy brine. Did it like overnight, brushed it off in the morning and threw it in the oven. You don't even need to season it because it's already got the salt in the brine. So it kind of seasoned it all the way through. And it was great. Buttermilk. I mean, it was really moist. How about you? Did you have you have a big family as it is.
We have seven.
So you didn't need to.
And last year.
So that's a party.
Last year we did. Well, it depends what you consider a party. But last year we did the same as you. We got a large bone-in turkey breast, and it was perfect.
Yeah.
This year, the boss said, you're bringing home a big bird. So I got a 20-pound turkey, and she did the whole thing. And I got to tell you, she brined this thing for 2 days in the fridge.
Yeah, it must have been delicious.
It was delicious. And the only really big plus of having that much turkey when we're by ourselves, I mean, we're not having anyone over, is the turkey croquettes that come afterwards.
We have talked about these turkey croquettes.
And you've never done them, right?
Yeah, never.
All right, well, this is something for the home cooking school.
Yes, I didn't have as many leftovers as I wanted. I think probably in hindsight, I should have still gotten a turkey, but I didn't. But I did like it. It was delicious, but just didn't last as long as we had hoped.
Jennifer Clare is our guest today on this Food Friday. 800-348-2551. The overarching theme is holiday cooking, but really, she knows just about everything. Let's go to Nick in Pownall. Nick, you're on.
Hi. Hi, Ray. I'm a big fan of yours.
Oh, my gosh.
You're like the Alex Trebek of WAMC.
Right, but everyone's a loser when they're on my show. That's the only difference. All right, well, go ahead.
Hey, I got a question. We recently moved, and we got a gas oven now instead of the electric. My wife is a good baker. She did the Big E. She was the second place. Was it last year or the year before? And we're having problems with the electric or the gas range. It seems to overbake everything. Is that the range, or should we put a thermometer in there, or is there a way to compensate?
Well, yes. Definitely put a thermometer in there in case it's running hot, so you know a technician to come in, and they can a technician can come in and calibrate your oven. You know, the person you bought it from should do it, but if you're out of warranty, you can get somebody else to come in. So is it a convection or a regular?
No, it's a regular gas oven.
No, but convection is just there's a fan in the back of the oven. So that is another way. Okay. So truthfully, unfortunately, if she's used to cooking in an electric oven, switching to gas is a big change because there's something called dual fuel ovens. So the best oven is electric and the best range on top is gas. So they make these so it's like an electric oven and a gas range because it's the best of both worlds. So you are definitely – it is not as consistent, the heat.
No,
so
it's
you really
not.
Have to play with zones in your – so there will be certain parts of your oven that are going to be hotter and cooler. So she's going to have to figure that out. So there will be more, changing the direction of the food. So if you're baking cookies, you want to rotate the pan 180 degrees halfway through. So, first start with a thermometer because if it's just a temperature thing, that's an easy fix. Otherwise, you just have to get to know the oven.
Okay.
Well, Nick, thanks for the call.
Yeah, thanks. Bye.
Hey, happy holidays. Appreciate it. 800-348-2551. I find this bit of news very interesting that you would consider electric ovens to be superior to gas ovens. And
Right, but not. I'm not talking about the top. So
it's more
consistent.
Now, I wonder why a gas oven would be less consistent. In other words, we have an electric oven, and it has the element at the bottom, and it warms up. But with a gas element, it still warms up, right?
It does, but it's not as consistent, and I don't know why, but it's not as regulated. It definitely, you know why? I know, because I have a gas oven. So, it comes on and off in spurts. So if you ever look inside your oven or listen, you can sort of hear the gas coming on and then it reaches temperature and then it shuts off.
Yeah.
So the same thing happens with electric, but electric doesn't turn off right away. Like if you have an electric burner and you turn it off, it's going to stay hot for a little bit longer.
Right. The metal element, stays hot. Oh, that makes sense.
So the same thing happens in your oven. It's just not as the regulation of the temperature is not the same. That's why they have something called dual fuel. And it's, it's the ultimate stove. Ultimate unit because it's got the gas on top and the electric in the oven.
All right, now you brought something else up, and hopefully my wife is not listening. But let's talk about meat thermometers here for a moment.
Santa Claus
may be bringing her one, although I.
What a lovely Santa Claus!
Now here's the question: because Santa is generally an idiot, what is the best form of meat thermometer, the high tech one, to get?
I think the best one, just to make your life easier, is the one that has a long, skinny probe that you stick into the meat.
Yeah.
And then there's a cord that comes outside of your oven and sits on the counter, attaches to a unit on the countertop. So you can watch the temperature of your meat changing from the countertop as opposed to opening up your oven, sticking the thermometer in, looking at the gauge and seeing what it says. I think it's called the probe thermometer, and it's really handy.
Okay.
Because you don't ever have to wonder, I wonder if it's 170 degrees yet. You know, you'll be looking at the digital read right on your countertop.
And when you actually, I've never used one. I mean, I grill all the time, and I've never, even London broil or anything, I've never used it. How far in do you put the probe to get the accurate reading?
Each one will tell you, like, so you just have to read the instructions. It's between, like, you know, maybe 2 inches, 3 inches. It depends where the sensor is. Sometimes it's at the tip, sometimes it's like an inch up. Another good one I just thought of, or that I just remembered, is an infrared thermometer. It looks like almost like a little gun, and you like shoot this infrared beam on your meat, and it unbelievably tells you the internal temperature of it.
How accurate could that be?
People swear by it. I don't have it. I can't put my, you know, I can't stake my life on it, but well, people love it.
In these COVID times, we see a lot of these handheld gun-like thermometers. I mean, they're everywhere.
Yeah,
so
right.
I wonder if it's the same principle.
It's probably exactly the same thing everyone's seeing.
Well, hell, we got one of those at home already. I'll just, you know, next time we got something in the oven.
You should try it. See if it does the same thing.
That would probably end in disaster, as most of my forays into the kitchen. The number here is 800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. Jennifer Clare is here. Jennifer is the founder and a culinary instructor at the Home Cooking New York, which is a cooking school. It has been a brick and mortar facility. It will be again, but right now it's online. And she is sort of a lax host of a cooking podcast. Whenever the spirit moves,
a lax host.
Yes, every now and again, you'll throw something together for the podcast.
Right. It's a lot of work.
Now, let's talk about roasts.
Yeah.
Now, there has been discussion about a Christmas roast this year. And first of all, cut of meat. What am I looking at to get a nice beef roast?
Right. So you want to, I mean, there's two ways of going. So a good roast, like a prime rib, it's a very expensive but very delicious. It's basically like ribeye steaks all attached with the rib still attached. Like it's like a crown roast of meat.
Right.
So those are amazing. You only cook it until it's like medium rare at the most because it stays, you know, beautiful and pink in the center. So that's one way of doing a roast, doing like a ribeye. And or a prime rib roast. Then there's another way, in my opinion, better because more tender, is doing sort of the long roast. So you get the opposite. You get a really tough piece of meat like a brisket or a chuck roast. A chuck roast is one of my favorites. It's a really, really tough cut of meat. So you have to cook it for about 3 hours in order to transform it into that kind of falling apart, really tender dish. So I love when I'm doing it's a braise. It's, you know, it's a stew as opposed to a roast.
Right.
But you still, you know, put it in a Dutch oven in the oven so you're still essentially roasting it. So a chuck roast is my favorite cut. And then you just have to throw a whole bunch of stuff in there. You want to brown the meat first just because it gives it some good flavor.
Yeah.
So you brown it all over on different sides and then just put it in a giant pot, same pot you browned it in, and throw in carrots, onions, can of tomatoes. You always want something acidic in there. So it can be red wine. It can be, you know, a can of tomatoes. It can be pomegranate molasses. It can be like lots of lemon or lime juice, but something acidic and aromatic. So aromatic are all the things that just give lots of flavor that you don't. At the end, you're not going to be like, oh, look at this delicious melted onion. But the onion will give the meat a lot of good flavor during those 3 hours. So onions, carrots, celery, some fresh herbs. And then you just throw a lid on it. It's got to have at least 2 or 3 inches of liquid at the bottom.
Right.
Put a lid on it and just stick it in the oven for like 3 hours. And every 30 minutes you check it, I like to poke at my, you know, food while it's cooking. But you're just also watching the liquid line to make sure that it's not, you know, dehydrated in there. So you add a little more broth. But it's just time. I mean, if you have a good piece of meat and you've got 3 hours to spare, you will make it all kind of tastes the same at the end because you cook something for 3 hours. Anything around the meat is going to sort of lost its flavor, but the meat will be incredible.
And that's what you would do.
That's what I do. Because I've done, well, first of all, a prime rib is very expensive. Like you get one rib for every two people. And I feel like this year, I guess because gatherings are smaller, doing a prime rib seems, I don't know. I guess I'm not excited about the pomp and circumstance of holiday cooking right now. I just want the sort of cozy, you know, the way it makes my house smell. So stewed chuck roast is my favorite. And then, you know, much like Thanksgiving, you still, if you make a big meat piece of it, you have it, you know, for days on end. You can make a great, like, quasi corned beef hash or breakfast the next day, just but with braised beef and potatoes.
With the eggs, oh, and the toast.
Oh, yeah.
I'd rather have that than the main course. All right, before we take a break, and then we'll get back to the phones, I just have a chemistry question for you. And we're joined today by Jennifer Clare. The number is 800-348-2551. We will get to the phones momentarily. You'd mentioned putting acid or some sort of lemon juice or something. What does the acid do?
So acid is a balancer of flavor. I mean, acid does a couple things. It does tenderize things, but because you're cooking it for 3 hours, you don't need the acid to actually tenderize it. The thyme is going to do that. So acid will make things softer. Like, remember I told you we did a buttermilk brine for the turkey? That buttermilk has acid in it. So it's, you know, it's an acidic bath. And so in India, you know, they marinate things in yogurt also just to make it more tender.
Right.
But the reason I use acid is just the balance of flavor. When you're cooking a huge piece of meat, there's lots of fat that comes out of it. And so to eat something that sort of bathes in fat without some sort of balancing element, it's not as delicious. So the acid from the wine or the tomatoes or the pomegranate juice or citrus is going to make it much more enjoyable to eat because it's got this balance. Salt, fat, and acid are the three. I call it the trifecta of flavor. So if you're cooking food and it's missing a little something, you're tasting it and you're like, what's, you know, what am I missing here? Why does it not taste great? You have to do that checklist. Is there salt? Is there fat? Is there acid? And typically people add salt to things if they think it doesn't taste good, but there are more tools to uncovering, you know, food's best flavor. Fat is one of them, which people tend to hold back on. So I say, please be heavy-handed with the fat. Or not heavy-handed, but don't hold back on it. And then acid. Acid's a really big one. Even a squeeze of lime juice, a drizzle of vinegar on something can really, you know, perk it up, make it come alive.
Jennifer Clare is our guest. Frankly, Jennifer, you had me at bathed in fat. But we'll get to that in a moment. We'll also get to the phones again, 800-348-2551. We'll be back. Vox Pop on WAMC. It's 800-348-2551. If you're desirous of a conversation with Jennifer Clare, let's go to the phones here. Jay in Huntington, Mass. Jay, you're on.
Yes, hello.
Hello.
I worked in the infrared field for a while. I'm not an expert, certainly not a cooking thermometer expert.
Okay.
But one of the things I do remember very clearly is that infrared measures surface temperature only.
Ah.
So it might be something worth looking into.
Okay. Well, that's a very good point. So we'll take that.
You know what?
Go ahead.
He is right. So what you do, I think these probes, you do have to put them into the meat. So it's like you push it into the center. So it is taking the temperature at that meat. You're probably right.
Makes
sense. Again, I only have no 50% of what I'm talking about in that department.
You're ahead of me.
But thank you.
Jay, thanks for the call. The number is 800-348-2551. This email came in from Jim. Jim says, the last two Thanksgivings, it has just been my roommate and me. Cornish game hens are perfect, cheap, easy, and quick. And that's Jim in Adams, Massachusetts. You ever do a Cornish game hen?
No, because I feel like that's not enough meat for me. It is the thing about Cornish game hens, it's like it's a single serving. So if like each person, when you get a Cornish game hen, you usually get the whole thing to yourself.
Yeah, well, that works.
They did a lot of that. That's like 80s cooking. I'm not being disparaging. They're delicious. But it's something that was a big hit, I feel like, in the 80s dinner parties. It's like everybody got their own little Cornish game hen. It was like, you know.
That's great.
Thing. I haven't seen one for a long time.
Oh, my gosh. You get invited to dinner parties. Well, this is good. This is another revelation. You can tell me about it at another point. Jesse and Troy. Okay. Jesse, you're on.
Hi. Yeah. Another just suggestion for an easy holiday meal that we're going to do this year. You know, smaller number of people. You can go a little more expensive. We're going to do king crab legs, which I had for the first time ever. Actually, my 8-year-old picked that for his birthday dinner. So,
how do you cook that? Wow, I have never cooked a king crab leg.
You know, they come frozen and pre-cooked, and it turns out that they like cook them on the boat in Alaska or wherever they get them from. So you just have to reheat them. So we did them in a, you know, a big sheet pan with aluminum foil because they're so big. Like, it, the hardest thing is finding a vessel big enough to put them in. But we kind of like steamed them, and, you know, they're done in like 15 minutes, and they are like, it was one of the top five things I've ever eaten in my life.
Really?
So good.
Oh my God. I am totally going to try it. I go to this store called Adams, which many of you who are listening probably know about, but I, they have it in their, in the, you know, in the freezer section or in the, not the freezer section, the seafood section. And I always see it in the freezer case, and I never think to buy it, but now I'm going to. I'm excited about that.
Did you? Thank you for the call. Did you ever see that show, what, the Most Dangerous Catch, I think it's called? Where
I've heard of it, yeah.
Oh,
is that what they catch?
I forget.
Pink crab legs?
I forget the name of the show. Deadliest Catch, maybe. I don't know.
Yes, that's what it is.
It's a very, very addictive program. But I don't know if you're going to want to eat king crab legs after the program.
Okay, I'll eat it first, and then I'll check it
out.
There
you go. Let's go to Martha.
Oh, that's a great idea.
Martha in Northampton, you're on with Jennifer Clare.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. We often go out for dinner around the holidays, and our favorite treat is filet mignon. And so I sort of impulsively bought some, thinking we would have that on Christmas Day. And I realized I have no idea how to cook this. How to cook tried it once and I killed it.
Oh.
Well, what is
killed it in
is
a bad way?
In the whole piece, or is it cut into medallions, like serving size pieces?
It's cut into serving size pieces, so they're about 3 or 4 inches roughly. And it's quite thick. I would say a couple inches thick.
So here's what you're gonna do. You're gonna blast them with heat. So you're gonna, you know, put a pan on the stove, your heaviest pan if you've got cast iron, that's good. You know, put a little bit of maybe about a tablespoon or two of high temperature oil. No butter, no olive oil, because you wanna really sear it. And you wanna season it well with salt and pepper both sides, and then sear it, brown the crust, you know, on both sides, you know, each one of those round sides until it's got a gorgeous color. And then you're just going to take the whole pan and stick it in the oven. You're not going to be able to cook them through on the stovetop because they're too thick, but you can get that nice char on the stovetop, and then you slide them into 375 degree oven until they're 125 to 130 degrees. The reason cooking filet mignon at home is hard is people always overcook it. And if you overcook over filet mignon, it doesn't taste like anything because filet mignon has one thing going for it, and that is tenderness. But it does not have the beef flavor that a good like T-bone ribeye steak has. So what you sacrifice in tenderness, you trade off with flavor. So if you don't overcook it, it will stay buttery and juicy and delicious. But if you overcook it, it kind of doesn't have much flavor left. So make sure you've got a thermometer at home. Do not try this without an Instamate thermometer. Because you want to catch it when it's between 125 and 130. And then you'll get the crust on the outside and then tenderness on the inside. But yeah, don't. I don't know. How do you normally like your steak? Like if somebody were to ask you at a restaurant?
I would say medium rare.
Okay, good. So then 130 is your target.
Hmm. Mm-hmm.
No more than that and you'll be fine. Mm-hmm.
And how do you feel about avocado oil as the cooking oil?
I love it. That's actually, that's my neutral oil of choice, the high temperature cooking. Absolutely.
Great.
Thank you
so much.
Happy holidays.
You're welcome.
We appreciate the call. I assume your method then, and I have never done a piece of meat like that on the stove. Like when I do filet mignon, I do it on the grill. But if I were to, we have a London broil that we put, I got two beautiful ones the last time I was grilling, and it's in the freezer. And if I were to cook the London broil, would it be basically the same method that you describe?
Yes. I mean, filet mignon, you want to keep pretty rare because it's so tender. London broil is not very tender. So typically, if you have a not tender piece of meat, you cook it a little bit farther because the heat will help tenderize it. So I would cook it more to like 140. It's a little bit different. But here, I'm going to plug my cookbook. If you ever want to know how to cook meat, any kind of meat, you buy the 6 Basic Cooking Techniques because 2 of the chapters are how to cook meat to perfection. And the second is how to make a pan sauce. Because once you make meat in a pan, you've got all these drippings left behind called fond.
Yeah.
And if you know how to work with them and what to add to the pan, you have like instant, you know, free sauce. And if you're looking for a good gift, holiday gift for anyone who likes to cook, then the 6 Basic Cooking Techniques. He'll teach you how to make a steak.
Okay, now you've gone through two. What are the other four? Because I know that we've talked about it, and I've forgotten all six. So give us the other four basic cooking techniques.
Well, the first chapter is knife skills. Second is cooking meat to perfection. Third is how to make a pan sauce. And then the last three are all about vegetable cookery. So roasting vegetables, working with leafy greens, and blanching green vegetables. Mm. And that kind of covers so much of what's available to buy. Because if you know how to cook food properly, then you can, you know, cook without recipes. You can buy stuff from the farmer's market or the market you don't necessarily know. But you're like, oh, this is a root vegetable. I know how to roast potatoes. Therefore, I know how to roast, you know, a parsnip or a carrot or anything like that. Mm. You know, it's all about learning sort of foundational techniques. So you just have a little bit more freedom in the kitchen. So you're not kind of always a slave to a recipe, and helps you just understand the science. You know, everything I know about food, it kind of sticks because I understand the principles of food. And so I'm always learning something new in terms of like flavor blending or ingredients, but the principles don't change, like how food cooks.
Yeah.
So once you understand that, then you kind of open up a whole world of different things.
But I always heard cooking was more art than science. Baking was more science than art.
Oh, no.
No?
Well, definitely there's a lot more science at play in baking because you have a lot of chemical reactions. But even in cooking, you know, you have the chemical reaction of browning and sort of understanding and like balancing salt, fat, and acid. So, yeah. There's art in both pastry and cooking, but when you go to cooking school, it's like when you go to medical school, you have to eventually choose your sort of concentration. Yeah. Like, are you going into pediatrics or surgery? So in cooking school, there's not many choices, but the two big fundamental ones are you going in the pastry direction or are you going in the culinary direction where you're, you know, working on the line? Because in a restaurant kitchen, the pastry section, the dessert section, is totally separate from the main kitchen. But the main kitchen is hot, and the pastry kitchen always has to be cool because you're, you know, making pastries, and a cool temperature is much more important. So for people who have a little bit more chill personality and don't like all the kind of testosterone insanity of like a hot kitchen, they tend towards pastry. But also pastry really affects people who are, or really appeals to people who are more scientifically minded. It's an amazing. It's artistic for sure, you know, beautiful piping and colors and flavor combinations, but you have to really understand the chemistry of food. Whereas I love cooking. I like tossing things together. I like being able to manipulate them up until the end. Not worried so much about chemistry, but more about like flavor combining.
Right.
So it's my brain.
You are an artist then.
Well, if I want to Yeah, why not?
All right, fair enough.
I'm a culinary artist.
There you go. Stacy and Saugerties. Stacy, you're on with Jennifer Clare.
Hi, I have a question about yeast. For years I've been baking, and I use just a regular unbleached white flour. Things have turned out wonderfully, but in the last year I've been working with gluten-free flour. How does yeast and gluten-free flour work together? Do I use the same quantities if I have a one-for-one flour as I would in other recipes?
I don't know how that works. I mean, I would never just substitute a wheat flour recipe, a yeasted wheat flour recipe with gluten-free flour, because the issue with yeast is that, you know, it creates all this gas that helps bread rise and leaven. But if you don't have the webbing structure, we call it the gluten matrix. So wheat flour has tons of gluten in it. So there's all this webbing that can be created, and all the air that comes out of the yeast, or all the gas, is trapped in this gluten matrix, this gluten web. If you have gluten-free flour, it doesn't create the same web because it doesn't have the same, you know, structure. So you can't, you'd have to find a recipe.
Tapioca.
Right. So I don't know enough about the science of gluten-free flour blending, but it's more gums and starches as opposed to gluten. It's like those are the substitutes. So I would definitely refer to recipes where they've been tested. You can absolutely use yeast and gluten-free flour, but it's not a one-to-one swap when you're using a recipe that calls for wheat flour.
All right. I have to come up with a great gluten-free donut recipe for Christmas. You wouldn't happen to have one of those with you.
You only have one week, Stacey.
I'll tell you, Google is amazing. Google will have hundreds of them. So it's worth just spending some time reading the comments. Don't just read recipes. Always read the comments. Because then you have all these people who have made that recipe you're about to make, and they're going to tell you what happened, whether it's good or bad.
Ooh.
All right, great trip. Thank you.
Stacy, do us a favor. Call us and tell us how it worked out. Now I'm very curious. Thank you for the call.
Yeah.
And, okay, we go over to Long Meadow, East Long Meadow. Ray, you're up.
Yes. I was wondering, you're talking about roasting beef and other, you know, pork and fish. How about balsamic vinegar as an acid? I hate to ruin a piece of meat or fish or whatever.
Well, I would not put it on fish. So balsamic vinegar is great. It's acidic, but it's also acidic plus caramel color. So balsamic vinegar that you buy in the supermarket, it's red wine vinegar with caramel color. So it's sweet. So sometimes acid plus sweet is a good addition to something. Like in a chuck roast, if you're going to stew that, I love balsamic vinegar because it sweetens, you know, sour. But I would not add it to something like fish, something delicate, because balsamic vinegar takes over a dish. So if you want your dish to taste exclusively of balsamic vinegar, then you can add it. But it doesn't play well with other flavors. It dominates.
Hey, Ray, do you have lions over there? Are you taming lions? What's going on?
Yeah, sounds like that. Yeah.
I don't know. People are driving by me.
Oh, that's what it is. All right, go ahead.
Okay. I just lost it.
I threw you off. I'm sorry. There they go. There they go again. Well, I'll tell you what. Let's let you go. And happy holidays, sir. Candace in Orange County, you're on.
Oh, hey. I was just calling about the thermometer.
Yeah.
I found a really good one.
Yeah.
Oh, tell us about it.
It's called the meter.
Meter?
It's called the meter. Yeah. And you set it up on your phone, your iPhone or whatever. It's an app. And it has a little line indented in it, so you know exactly how far to insert it into the meat. And it tells you your whole cooking process. You can pick poultry, the type of poultry, and it tells you the internal temperature, the external temperature, and then it gives you a resting time.
Huh.
Pretty cool.
So this
is an app? Has a probe that you stick into the meat?
It is a probe. It's very fancy. Comes in a little wooden box. I guess it has a battery inside it, so it keeps it charged every time it's just resting, stored.
And then that is very cool.
It is really cool, but I do always have a backup old type of thermometer.
You don't quite trust
just in
it.
Case, because I don't trust
right.
it.
No, right.
I do not trust it. So I do have that. There are two types of that one, though. There's one that's like a long range where you can be in another room. And the one I got is a short range, and it's kind of a pain because it'll start to beep once you go out of range. So you just
can't leave your kitchen if you're using it.
Ah. Right. Well, that's
great. Right. I mean, one of them you can, but it's a lot more expensive.
Yeah.
That is so cool.
Well, I'll
though.
Tell you, my favorite thermometer is called Thermopop. I also like it because it's orange, but it's a very slender probe. It's not the one that comes out of the oven. It's something you stick in, but it's very accurate. Thermopop.
All right,
and
very
they're
good.
Pretty.
Well, Candace, thank you very much for the call. And we're almost done here, Jennifer Clare. Very quickly, Larry, our buddy Larry wrote in, what do you know about Cornell University barbecue sauce? Bell sage, vegetable oil, egg, vinegar. When I was a kid, my grandfather's Rod and Gun Club would have their annual chicken barbecue, and he always claimed the recipe came from Cornell, and that's from Larry.
Eggs? How are eggs and oil in a barbecue sauce? I don't understand that.
I don't know.
Sounds like a mayonnaise.
I'm not sure.
I'd have to say thumbs down. I don't want any eggs in my barbecue sauce.
Now, if people want to find your cooking school, how do they do it once again?
HomeCookingNY.com, right on the homepage are all the public classes we're offering every day. If you want to pop in for a 90-minute class in your own house with me or one of my teachers.
And the book, is the book for sale at that website as well?
You can find it right on the website and the homepage, right? And then the, gift cards.
Very good.
Anything for the holiday. But yeah, it's a good time to get used to your kitchen. So if you're feeling like, you know, again, when the vaccine hits, full blast. No one's going to ever want to cook at home again. So this is a good time to keep going.
Okay. And we can expect another podcast in 2022. Is that correct?
Yes.
All right. Hey, Jennifer.
Nice.
We're done, but have a lovely holiday season and a happy new year. And we will talk to you in person. I know it before 2021 is out.
Can't wait. All right. Thanks, Ray.
See ya. Support comes from Cafe Capriccio, Albany, New York. The Rua family serving Albany since 1982. Their regional Italian cuisine now available for online ordering. CafeCapriccio.com for information. at Big Y, family-owned and operated market with locations throughout the Berkshires, celebrating more than 80 years of serving communities throughout New England. BigY.com. Once again, thanks to Jennifer Clare for being here. Thank you for listening. Thank you for the calls. Thank you for the emails. Thanks to Barb King, who took the calls. Zach the Beast Malloy is our engineer. Have a great weekend. We'll have a special Psychiatry Medical Monday. That's Monday at 2. Right now, stand by for the best of our knowledge.